statewide on the Golf Club Network. It's the Golf Club Radio Show with Danielle Tucker.
Hey, great day today, isn't it? Welcome in the clubhouse. It's already September 22nd. It's almost fall. Isn't it beautiful? In the clubhouse, Bob Bupka, the voice of golf, World Golf Radio on Sirius XM in the grill room. He's at Lee East Lake, the Tour Championship, the FedEx Cup playoff, the final event. We're going to find out who wins $10 million. And by the way, over at Navistar, we have a battle going on between Stacey Lewis and Lexi Thompson. They are both 12 under par. Before we get to Bob Bupka, let's thank the people who make this show possible.
The Golf Club, brought to you by Alakai Mechanical, the best minds in plumbing, air conditioning, and sheet metal. When you need a new roof, flashing, gutters, downspouts, AC ducts, or a commercial kitchen and custom stainless steel counters, it's Alakai Mechanical. Hoipu Bay Golf Course, combining the beauty of nature and the design of Robert Trent Jones, Jr. Bordered by emerald green mountains, 30 acres of tropical plants, and ancient places of worship. Hoipu Bay Golf Course, Kauai's South Shore gem. Also brought to you by Discount Furniture Warehouse, offering a wide range of furniture to complement your island lifestyle. 345 North Nimitz Highway, visit HawaiiDiscountFurniture.com. Discount Furniture Warehouse, where the prices are so low, it's insane. And by Star Protection, for property threat and risk assessment, protection for your home or business or special event. Get the Star Team on your property. Star Protection is what you need in Hawaii and California.
Jim Furyk, outright leader at the Tour Championship by Coca-Cola, the final event in the FedEx Cup. He shot a 64 yesterday. Did he have some fun? I think so.
Obviously a fun day. Be able to write three on your card nine times in the first 11 holes was a lot of fun. I struggled to kind of keep that momentum going the last six holes, but I feel like I played a real solid round of golf.
Let's talk with Bob Bupka, the world of golf, voice of golf, the grill room co-host. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Danielle. And I think it's a little bit unfair that you'd be moaning the fact that it's going to be fall in Hawaii. I mean, it really is no difference. I mean, I have to worry about fall. You don't have to worry about fall.
I'm actually not bemoaning it. I enjoy it. We get cooler temperatures, which for us means a better night of sleeping. those of us without air conditioning.
There was no cool temperature yesterday for Jim Furyk. That was a good cut you just played. And, you know, to think that he started out his round, we were there watching. We said, look at this. He's made three on one, three on two, three on three. What's going on?
Yeah.
He made three on four, three on five, three on six, three on seven. I said, and he shoots 29 on the out with nine. We had the window open for a 59 watch, but it didn't materialize.
Doesn't that make Davis Love look like an absolute genius? Of course, he was going to pick Jim Furyk, but Jim, I mean, he seems to just peak at the right time, doesn't he?
Well, you're right on the money with that one, Danielle. Had to be a little nerve-wracking for Davis Love. You know, he did make Jim Furyk his captain's pick, and he did leave off Hunter Mahan, who won twice on the PGA Tour. In fact, Hunter Mahan now is the only player ever to win two times in a Ryder Cup year and not make the Ryder Cup team. And I think if Hunter Mahan had won down here and doesn't look like he's going to get that done now, it would have been really tough on Davis Love, but the fact that Jim Furyk's playing so well bodes well for the Ryder Cup team.
You know, Hunter Mahan not playing well. Let's talk a little bit about that. He said that the thrill of the game, the desire to play well, just went right out of him when he wasn't chosen. Does he still show those signs of deflation?
Yeah, he did, Danielle. I mean, it's one thing to anticipate getting picked to play on the Ryder Cup team, but it's another thing to basically do what you think is enough to make a Ryder Cup pick. Matter of fact, it was surprising that he didn't make it on points. And then, you know, with those two victories, you would think that, wow, automatically Davis Love would give him the nod, but it didn't work out that way.
Well, he wasn't hot. And I mean, I was trying to figure out who would Davis Love not have chosen to bring Hunter Mahan into the fold. And it was tough. And I think he made the right choices, even though for Hunter Mahan, of course, it was absolutely horrible. And I just hope he gets it back together again, because you just have to take these things and, you know, just go, okay, I'm going to do better and suck it up and move on. It's not easy.
Yeah.
Though. Yeah.
I don't want you to think there's an air raid out at East Lake. But,
yeah. What's going on?
I don't know. I really don't. I think they're a little late. They were coming from yesterday. They thought Jim Furyk was on fire when he made those 7 threes. So
okay.
Go back. There's no alarm here, so
okay.
We're
okay.
All right.
Okay, we're cool. Okay, let's do a little bit more Ryder Cup. I mean, you wrote a book, Ryder Cup, the golf's greatest, didn't you? Golf's
event.
Greatest event, right?
Yeah.
And we've got to win, don't we? I mean, don't I think on in the grill room you guys talked about this weekend, and you'll be on again Sunday on Sirius XM, and you can always listen online too. Just go to the grill room, and you'll find the cuts there. Do you think we've got the home course advantage? Do we have to win at Medina to prove that we are as good or better than the Europeans?
Well, it's, you know, they've won 6 out of the last 8 Ryder Cups. I think if we don't win this time, I think just like Jack Nicklaus did in the late 70s when he petitioned the European side to include all of Europe. Originally, it was just Great Britain and Ireland, and the United States was completely dominating the Ryder Cup. Since the inclusion of the rest of Europe, it's gone the other way. So I said, well, if the United States doesn't win at Medina in Chicago, I'm going to call Jack Nicklaus and see if he can ask if we can use Canadian players to play on the United States side to even it out just a little bit. But I've created my own barometer for this year's Ryder Cup, and we'll see how accurate I am.
What's your barometer?
Rory McIlroy, if he wins tomorrow, Europe will win the Ryder Cup. If Rory McIlroy doesn't win the Tour Championship, America will win the Ryder Cup. Don't ask me if that makes any sense, because, you know, most of what I say doesn't make sense. So, but we'll wait. You know, I just got a funny feeling about this.
Okay, and I'm curious about Justin Rose. I mean, Justin Rose is playing very well. He's been playing well all year long. And what if he wins?
Well, you know, I knew you would screw up my formula.
No, I think that the Ryder Cup is going to be very interesting, because there's a very strong European team. We've got a great team, but the Europeans, even though we're on the, and Davis Love III being able to decide how he wanted the course set up, how he wanted to make Medina with little or no rough, does that help us? Does that make the course easier to play?
Well, in Davis Love's words, he said, anybody that has suggested to me to make Medina long so it favor the Americans, he said, obviously hasn't watched Rory McIlroy play. The longer you make the course, the better it's going to suit him. And on top of that, they have a player from Belgium, by the way, the first ever Belgian player to play Ryder Cup, by the name of Nicholas Colsarts, and he's longer than everybody.
Yeah.
So making the golf course long, I don't know. You know, there's interesting characters there. You got Paul Laurie, who's come back from the dead. He won the Open Championship back in 1999 at Carnoustie. And then less than a year ago, playing with his 14-year-old son, couldn't beat him. And then rededicated himself because he said he just could not tolerate having his 14-year-old son play better than him. He's playing great golf. Sergio Garcia with the recent win. I mean, it's just going to be a lot of fun next week.
Yeah.
That's the only way I can put it. And what I hope for, like I do every Ryder Cup, come Sunday, I'd like to see it all even. Come down to the last 3 matches, see it all even, and then we'll have some fun.
Steve Stricker, Payne Stewart recipient. That is so cool. Another Ryder Cup member, sort of with a star this week. It's
yep.
Perfect. He's the perfect recipient. He's such a good man.
Yeah, he really is. And, you know, on the surface, a lot of people not that familiar with Steve Stricker, has never won a major, you know, just a real down-to-earth, solid performer. And there's a lot of parallels when you dig a little deeper into Steve Stricker history compared to Payne Stewart. Payne Stewart went through a slump and then came back. Steve Stricker has gone through some slumps and has come back. When he first came out on the tour, had his wife Nikki caddying for him just to save enough money so that he could play on the PGA Tour, and just does a lot off the golf course. I am very much in favor of the selection of Steve Stricker, just one of the real good guys on the PGA Tour.
Mm-hmm. Now, how about the Hall of Fame? Fred Couples is inducted. 51% of the vote. You need 50 at least, right? Do you think Fred Couples was the right choice? If there's a right choice?
I think Danielle Tucker should have been in the Hall of Fame before Fred Couples. And I'm just teasing a little, and I would tell Fred, I love Fred, and Fred's been very good to me in my work for a huge number of years. But I point out one thing, and that is the record of Corey Pavin. They both won 15 times, just like Fred Couples, on the PGA Tour. They both won one major. The major difference there, though, Corey Pavin won a U.S. Open. And, it's a lot harder to win a U.S. Open than it is to win a Masters. And the fact that Corey Pavin wasn't even on the ballot anymore because he didn't generate enough votes while he was on the ballot. So he's not on the ballot when Fred Couples gets elected with 51% of the votes. The Hall of Fame, quite honestly, is doing whatever it can to try and generate some excitement. And yes, Fred Couples will get some people to come down to the induction next May, the Monday of the Players' Championship. So that's basically what it's all about. I mean, how foolish is it when you think of it? How about Ernie Els getting elected into the Hall of Fame last year and then goes and wins the Open Championship this year? So now they're going to have to change everything in the Hall of Fame on his record because he's added another major.
So should guys who are actively playing be even inducted into the Hall of Fame? Okay.
Absolutely not.
All right.
Call me another time. I'll let you know how I really think.
So Hall of Fame, Fred Couples has the fame going on for him, doesn't he?
Yeah. Fred summed it up best when he got the phone call from Commissioner Tim Fincham. He said, "Fred, congratulations, you're in the Hall of Fame." And Fred says, "Wow, that really is quite an honor, and I'm overwhelmed a little bit." He says, "Because I always thought of myself as a good player, but I never thought of myself as a great player."
I like what he said. You know, you can play good and win, and you can play great and lose. That was such a good quote, and everybody should tuck that one in their hat. There are days when you can do in life good, and you'll win. And there are days when you can do great, and you lose. So it's okay. It doesn't have anything to do with the quality of you. That's the bottom line. You know, you can be great and not necessarily win. So just keep on trucking.
Yeah, that's a good point, Danielle. And it almost leads to one complaint I have about losing Ryder Cup captains. The old fallback for years has been, the other team just made more putts than we did. I mean, good golly. I mean, you know, in a football game, their losing coach might as well say, "Gee, we played great. They just scored more points than we did. And baseball, they just scored more runs than we did." I mean, making putts is part of golf.
Yeah.
I've heard that so many times by the losing captain, as if that's the, "Oh, that makes it okay because they just made more putts." I mean, it's really hard on Ryder Cup captains. Number one, they get far too much credit when their team wins, and they get far too much blame when their team loses.
I'm looking at this leaderboard at East Lake and the FedEx Cup finale. It's interesting to see, you know, who's Scott Percy? Wow. I mean, he just barely squeaked in the top 30 and doing phenomenally. What are the chances that he actually wins the FedEx Cup? Isn't there some sort of... Yeah, you guys, don't you ruminate over if Rory McIlroy comes in 29th and Scott Percy comes in second?
Scott Percy has as much chance of winning the FedEx Cup as Daniel Tucker. Well, maybe our husband, Rick, can make it even more. But no, Scott Percy has no chance whatsoever. There's so many things. You know, it's like Lewis Oosthuizen. There's a mathematical possibility. If he finishes second, he'll win the FedEx Cup, and he never won a playoff event. Rory McIlroy's won a couple of playoff events, and he may not win the FedEx Cup. So there's more tinkering to be done by the PGA Tour.
Yeah, but it's a great... I mean, we've got Jim Furyk, Justin Rose, Bubba Watson, Bo Van Pelt, Dustin Johnson, Matt Kuchar, Rory McIlroy, Robert Garrigus. He's chosen to go with the regular putter, right? No longer the itty-bitty one, no longer the very long one. He's gone with just right.
You're talking about Garrigus' putter. Sounds like you're reading me a fairy tale. A little bitty one, a little big one.
Exactly. Well, you picked up on that, yes. So he seems to be happy with the standard off-the-shelf variety.
Yeah, until he misses a putt, then he'll go to another length.
And that's
you know,
what we...
He's like every other golfer.
Yes. How many putters do you have? Oh, I don't know, 30.
Golfers have to learn one important thing that was told to me a long time ago by perhaps the greatest teacher of golf that ever lived by the name of Harvey Phoenix. And he said, Bob, it's not the arrows, it's the Indian.
Uh-huh. Now, how about the Indian Tiger Woods?
Which Tiger Woods are we talking about? The one that showed up here on Thursday that looked like the Tiger of old, and the one that showed up here on Friday looked like he just hit another fire hydrant.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see if Justin Rose, you know, Hunter Mahan, Tiger Woods, Sean Foley students, do they all need mental coaches so they can actually close? I'm not convinced that he's teaching these guys. They've got great swings, but for some reason, there's something that's missing, and it's a feel, it's something. I'm not sure what it is. Have you thought about that?
Well, ironically enough, you bring that up. Sean Foley has developed into really a good friend of Janice and I, but to be perfectly candid, yesterday morning he showed up. I happened to be in the parking lot when he pulled in. This was right after Tiger's brilliant performance on Thursday. And the first thing I said to him was, well, I guess we're not going to be hearing about Sean Foley teaching the wrong things to Tiger. And he said, I told everybody, but they didn't listen to me. I think waited for him in the parking lot this morning. I think he came in on the subway. He didn't come into the parking lot.
The back door. All right, speaking of interesting comments, if we were, Charles Barkley, followed by just Greg Norman's whole intimidator statement, right? And then Charles Barkley comes out, and Jack Nicklaus even weighed in on this. Quiet, Greg, down boy. Something about Greg Norman saying that, you know, Tiger Woods is intimidated now by Rory. Well, you've heard this whole story. I think we've been talking about this way too long. But when Charles Barkley said that he's tired of Tiger Woods taking the high road.
That's a good point. Everybody in the media is tired of Tiger taking the high road. I mean, what Greg Norman said was so ludicrous. Just in the last 2 months, they played together 8 times. 6 of the 8 times, Tiger Woods has shot a lower score than Rory McIlroy. So how's he intimidated? I think Tiger, everybody thought he was making light and said, no, it's just the hair that intimidates me. Because Rory's hair is growing faster than Tiger's hair is falling out.
Yeah.
So that would be intimidating.
Okay. So the media would like Tiger Woods to stand up and actually say something that would create controversy instead of just sort of his mamby-pamby milquetoast sort of comments or non-comments?
One of our special guests on the Grill Room was Ian Carter, who works for BBC 5 out of London and, you know, covers a huge portion of Europe. And we asked him specifically what it's like for him to ask a question of Tiger Woods. And he said very bluntly, he said, it's very frustrating that I never get an answer. You know, Tiger hasn't given an answer in you know, 15 years that he's been out there. He'll say what he thinks you probably want to hear, but he never really answers the question.
Okay. Well, I think it's interesting that we want somebody to not take the high road, especially in the game of golf. And I've come to the conclusion that I'm not sure who's in the back room figuring out the next strange controversy, but every week something comes up that makes us talk about something that's really off the wall in the game. Like, I don't know, Greg Norman. Did somebody put Greg Norman up to saying this just so that we'd be talking about it? Just food for thought. Bob Bupka, great show. You've got to listen. It's on Sirius XM, Saturdays, Sundays, 10 o'clock in the morning, Eastern Time, until 12, PGA Tour Network. That's Sirius 208 XM 93. Or go online, thegrillroom.com. Bob, thanks for being on the show.
I thank you, and hopefully we'll be able to catch up a little bit next week when we're in Medina for what should prove to be a very, very exciting Ryder Cup.
Oh, yeah. You're here.
All right.
You're stuck with me.
I love it. All right.
We'll talk
Don't
to you next week.
Don't be saying anything about Tiger Woods now over the next week.
We'll try not to. Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
Aloha. We'll be back after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
In the security business, trust is earned over time. That's why Star Protection Agency has grown to be the largest locally owned security company in Hawaii. We've earned a reputation as a common sense, highly responsive, cutting-edge security provider. Our clients know that we're watching out for them. We know that our fast response is what makes us a star performer.
And we'd like to thank our clients for their trust over the past 20 years.
Trust your security to the Star. Star Protection Agency.
Your AC runs year-round in Hawaii. Whether you're an office, store, building, or shopping center, your AC on the fritz can ruin your day and stop your business. Alakai Mechanical does it all, from AC sales to maintaining your AC, so it runs better and lasts longer. Alakai world-class professionals are using only the best parts to keep you cool. Protect your investment. From window system to cooling towers across Hawaii, call Alakai Mechanical, keeping you cool.
Hoipu Bay on Kauai's South Shore. Come share our home where the Grand Slam was played. Robert Trent Jones Jr. saw the mountains and felt the sea. Sure, great vistas and greens most people only dream of. Take the day off or do business with a bunch of your best customers. Come join the fun and the aloha at Poipu Bay. Call us for your tea time, where great golf is played every day at Poipu Bay.
Off a tree, hit a rock, and bounce next to the pin. That's my kind of golf. Now, back to Danielle Tucker on the Golf Club.
And you're in the clubhouse. It's going to be a partly sunny day today. Scattered showers, windward and Mauka, that's on the mountainside. And the high today between 84 and 89. The trades are with us to 15. Very light trade wind. So don't expect it to be really breezy. So it should be for a great round of golf. And if you'd like to play, that is, at Volcano, it's a chilly 56 degrees. Isn't that marvelous? It's there's a tee time open at 10:12, 10:36, 11:24. Makalei has a 9:48. Poipu has a 9:20, 11:20, 12 o'clock, 12:50. 25% off the sale rack. And Hawaiian dredging, may y'all hit the sweet spot every time. All right, so we've got some great golf going on all over the world, including at Navistar, the LPGA, where Lexi Thompson is the defender, and she's 12 under through 14. Stacey Lewis, she's 12 under through 7, challenging Lexi, who is the defending champion. We've got a great leaderboard, and you'll be able to watch that today on Golf Channel 2. All right, let's get right into, you know, I think Lexi Thompson was on the Junior Ryder Cup at one time, a junior golfer that who's followed these steps to the LPGA. Now, a full member of the LPGA Tour, a professional golfer, but she played junior golf. And the Hank Haney International Junior Golf Academy is something that you might consider if you've got a star on your hands, someone who you think would do well in an environment where not only is golf taught, but academics, but the whole culture is about golf. And Doug Alexander is the director of training. He is the director of instruction at the Hank Haney International Junior Golf Academy. He joins us now. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning. How are you?
Excellent, sir. Yeah, were you perchance listening to any of the conversation with Bob Bupka?
Yes, I did. I caught a little bit of the end of that.
Yeah.
Very true about what he said.
Which part were you thinking?
Well, if Tiger hasn't answered a question in 15 years, it is over the years that I've been with Hank, which is 24 years now, you know, I've got to listen to Hank and things that kind of went on between Tiger and him and all. And Hank's pretty close to the vest kind of person, and so is Tiger. And they just really don't want the media to run with things. So they just going to say what they need to say to get through the interview, really.
And in part, you don't really blame them. You know,
everybody dissects everything that they say.
Yes, precisely.
Completely. You know, and they don't know the story. In fact, it was a funny story that Hank told me when it was with Tiger. Was Tiger was they finished practicing, and Tiger was heading home, and he said, "Well, I'll have to go turn on Golf Channel and see what I said today."
And see how they're dissecting it.
Exactly. What did I say today? What did I do today? You know, it was kind of funny. He kind of takes it in stride.
Yeah.
You got to.
You
have to.
Great.
And no one, Jack Nicklaus is probably one of the best of all times, but he didn't even have the scrutiny that went on with Tiger or goes on with Tiger. So no one knows. No one's ever been in that kind of fish bubble. Like he has.
In fact, Jack Nicklaus was having a conversation with one of the guys from Golf World, Golf Digest. They were, and it was great. It was streaming on Ustream, and Jack was he was just having a great time. He was very candid. He was asked, Lee Trevino playing with him, you know, did you? He said, I drove him crazy because Lee wouldn't stop talking.
Right. Well, it's kind of funny because one of our instructors, Albert Salinas in Dallas, was Lee Trevino's agent at the time. And so I got to hear a lot of those stories also.
Yeah.
And he would do it on purpose, just take Jack out of his game. Gamesmanship never hurts.
No. And that's, you know, they say it's an individual sport, you know, and you're playing against the course. Hey, come on. The guys you're right, you know, they're doing everything they can to vibe out the other person. It's
exactly.
Got to be happening. And P.S., the golf Twitter handles were ranked the best people to follow on Twitter by Sports Illustrated. And in that group, Hank Haney. Hank does a lot of things. If you ask him a question, if he's on Twitter and he kind of lets you know, okay, I'm answering questions. He'll answer. He's great.
It's very funny because when the parents and the kids will show up for the first day at the academy, we have a dinner and a hello and a meet and greet, and Hank will speak. And Hank is a very straight to the point kind of person. And Hank will tell you, do you want the sugar coated or do you want it right between the eyes? And Hank goes, you're getting it right between the eyes. That's what you're going to get. And that's one of the things that I really like about Hank. You know exactly where you stand, and he'll tell you. And if you don't like it, it's usually the truth, and he's usually correct when it's all said and done. Most of the time, when you look back, every time he says something or does something, it's for a reason. And like I said, I've been with him for 24 years now.
The International Junior Golf Academy is what we're talking about. Opened its doors with an enrollment of 6 students in 1995. By 2000, the academy had grown to the point that it needed housing, right?
Yes.
So yes. Tell us a little bit about how this works. What happens if you decide that you want your child to go to something like the Hank Haney International Junior Golf Academy?
What they do is we usually have an interview process, And then you, most of the time, the people will come down and will give you a tour of the school, of our housing, of our golf. I'll go out and watch you hit some balls for a little while and kind of tell you my plan of what we would do to help you move forward in your game. And then our mental instructor would have a talk with you quickly, kind of see where you are mentally. And our physical conditioning coach would then talk to you also. So there, and then you're like, okay, I want to come. And then you would show up, and we start the process. You're trying to take a young adult and turn them into the best they can be.
So how old do you start?
We have one that is 11 and up to 19.
Wow, so this is like a boarding school.
Correct.
As simple as that, a boarding school,
yeah.
And where you specialize in the academics of life and golf.
Correct. It's a prep school for golf.
Prep school for golf. Excellent. And where are you located?
In Hilton Head, South Carolina.
Excellent. All right. And the accolades from parent testimonials, really, really nice to read. We dropped our daughter off 1,000 miles away from home at Hankaney International Junior Golf Academy with people we had met only twice. They took her in as if she were family and not only taught and mentored her into being a great golfer, but also an even more wonderful person. Doesn't get much better than that.
No.
Yeah.
And that's what we try to do. You're really helping a young adult move forward in life, and you hope that their golf is outstanding and they go to college, but you hope that they become a really good person. And if they become a really good person and take what they've learned from golf and the academics and move forward in life with or without the golf, I think we've done a good job.
94% of your students go on to college programs?
Yes.
Wow.
They go on and play. And it may be all the way down. It may be NAIA, and it may be Division I. You know, there are so many kids that play golf now, and they're all from all over the world. So, yeah, it's very difficult to get on a team. And then, well, that's another thing that we do that I didn't do, is we also have a college placement where we help you get your resume together. And then send them out to coaches where you would like to go, and depending on what kind of game you have, if you're looking to play at what level and what level coach or what kind of level school that it is, it's a long process to get somebody a lot of times on a team because there's so many people looking for spots to play.
Yeah.
So that's a big service that we have that a lot of other people, if you don't know what you're doing, it's pretty difficult, especially if you're not the best player in the best amateur in the world. Nobody knows who you really are, or you're from another country. We have a lot of kids from Thailand and Japan and a few from Italy, so they wouldn't be known in the United States very well.
May I ask you this? Yanni said something that create a little stir. I think on Monday she said when she goes out and she looks at the practice range, they're all Asians. All Asians. They're all, and I understand kind of, I think what she was trying to say is, and that a lot of people have said this, that they seem to, Asian students seem to have a stronger work ethic than, let's say, U.S. or Western European students. Do you find that the case?
Well, you will go out and look at our range on the weekends, and that statement is very true.
Hmm.
You will see that our Asian kids are out there working harder than a lot of other kids.
I wonder what is that? Is that what's instilled in them as children through their parents?
Yes. It's mostly a culture that you would not disgrace your parents by playing poorly, and they're sacrificing a lot to come to our academy. It's a long process, especially coming from over there. And the standard is set very high. The bar is set very high over there. And you don't say no. In the United States, you may talk back to your parents. Over there, you don't say no.
No, you don't say no.
You go up, you do it 110%.
7 days a week.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing I think that happens in from the Asian perspective is there's so much competition.
There really is.
Density of population is so intense that they know that they're up against a plethora.
Big words today.
Say that again?
Big words today. College words.
May not have been the right one. But, you know, it's just a huge number that they know is competing for a small little piece. And they can see it, physically see it every day, where we don't have that density of population in the United States. And I don't think we see our competition as strongly as they do in those very densely populated countries. I think it makes a big difference. Now, tell us a little bit about when you assess mentally and physically, how do you, sir, as the director of instruction, how do you assess the child and their readiness to be in your academy? What are you looking for?
Well, basically, looking for someone who has a passion for the game. That's first and foremost, okay? Do you have a passion for the game? Are you willing to work when it's cold out and when it's raining out and when it's extremely hot out? Can you do it 5, 6, 7 days a week? I try to get them to take at least a Sunday off or at least half Sunday off, because just so they don't get burned out, because there is so much and we travel to different parts of the country playing tournaments. They need a little downtime because they're going to school, which is they're taking three classes and it's very very vigorous, and they're working out quite a bit. So, but I would look at them and see, okay, where are they strong? What parts of the games are strong? What parts are not so strong mentally? How they deal with stress more than anything else? How they deal with their emotions when they're under the gun? And then, so like when we first come in, we'll have them go out and play 4 rounds of golf. And basically that's the most stressful time for them, because if they haven't been in the academy, they're away from home. They're sleeping in a new bed. They don't know the golf course. Maybe jet lag. And now I'm going to make them go play 4 rounds and I see what they shoot. Because a lot of them, they come and tell me how they're even par. And they will then go and proceed to shoot 85. And you're like, we weren't even par this week. And understanding they don't know the course particularly well. But you're kind of like, even if you're a scratch golfer, shoot 72, you're not going to shoot 85 if you can manage your game to manage your emotions. If you got to hit 5-iron off the tee, you'll hit 5-iron, and I can still make bogey every hole kind of thing and do better than doing what I'm doing now. And then we will then separate them into different groups, kind of by ability. And then we have the coaches, like we'll have two coaches, and it's about 6.5 to 7 players per coach. And we have two coaches together, so there's usually about 13 to 14 kids in a group with two coaches. And then I would see the coaches and the kids. And then Hank will come in and oversee me, make sure we're on the right path. So we're always got people making sure that we've got a plan that we're on and we stick to it.
Excellent. It kind of, when you were talking about the youngster coming in and saying, I'm even par, and then shooting any, it's kind of like going from JV to varsity.
It is.
Right? And you're going underclass, you're going from high school to college ball.
Right.
You come
That's
out of
exactly
your...
Exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah. And how do you handle the new experience of not being the star on the golf course? You're no longer the star on your home course. You're just one of a bunch. And how do you handle that? I imagine these kids, they've been playing, the 11-year-old, I can't imagine for how long, but they must have a swing that they've already worked into their whole body. They've got the swing thing. Do you change swings? How do you approach the teaching of the golf game?
It's kind of interesting. A lot of kids, that's why we make them play the rounds beforehand, because you're more receptive to change something if you shoot a big number. All of a sudden you're like, well, I don't normally shoot that, but you did. You played 4 days of golf and you played poorly, really. Not always, but sometimes you played poorly. Or
So then after that point, you're like, well, if we do this and this, then we won't hit the big miss. Hank would say, okay, we got to get rid of the big miss. We've got to get rid of...
That's funny. Isn't that the name of a book?
Yeah, it is the name of a book. But it's also in everyone's golf game, they have a big miss, one that they're guarding against or afraid of. And it doesn't matter what level you get to. You're like, I'm afraid I'm going to hook it. I'm afraid I'm going to slice it. I'm afraid I'm going to fat it or thin it, whatever it is. So you need to eliminate the big miss so they have a shot that they can get in play when they're nervous. And you need to eliminate your three putts. So we work a lot on, can we just lag the ball up 6 inches past the hole or 6 inches before the hole? And then eliminating your two chips. You don't chip it more than one time. You just chip it on the green and hopefully close enough that maybe you'll make the putt or close enough you lag it up there and you don't make a double. And if you do those things, all of a sudden you take the somebody that shoots 85 and we're down in 78 quickly without really even changing their golf swing, just managing their game better. But yes, we do change their golf swing because, again, as Hank would say, is if your technique worked, you wouldn't be here and you wouldn't need us.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of truth to that. You know, they have weaknesses in their game. They may not be able to draw the ball as well as they can fade the ball. They may not be able to flight the ball down when it's windy. As I was listening to you, you said that you have trade winds of 15 miles an hour today. Well, 15 miles an hour is about almost a club and a half. So can you turn it down, basically, or hit a low punch shot in there when it's into the wind? And a lot of kids don't know how to do that. So when they get in a windy situation, their scores balloon because they've got the ball ballooning. So you teach them different shots to help them better and play in different conditions.
Excellent. You know, what you said, the fear of shot, from what I understood, the way you put it is you have that shot that you're afraid of,
uh-huh.
And so you learn a go-to shot that you're comfortable
right.
with.
Right.
I think everybody should do that, you know.
And that's exactly right. There's most of the time, and we see it with the kids, and I know even amateurs, even the pros, they're looking around. When you first stand up on the tee, you're surveying, okay, where's the out-of-bounds, where's the water, where's the trouble? Well, the lesser player is more focused on, I don't want to hit it out of bounds, I don't want to hit it out of bounds, is what's running through their head instead of really being specific on where they'd like to hit the ball, really being specific about their target. With that being said, once they can get to that point, then they're going to play better golf. I mean, they're really focused on what they're trying to do and what they're not trying to do. That's kind of the basis of that.
Excellent. And we're talking with Doug Alexander, Director of Instruction, Hank Haney International Junior Golf Academy. Trains junior golfers for success in tournament golf and beyond. We're the only academy, they say, in the world that combines training, academics, and competition. And through their supportive and competitive environment, students develop the critical qualities of commitment, goal setting, a consistent work ethic to best impact their academics, golf, and future endeavors. Excellent. I like it. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed talking with you.
Excellent. Well, we'll have to catch up again in the future, and let us know when some of your stars, where they're going and what they're doing, and we can feature somebody. That would be fun.
I would love to.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Aloha. We'll be back after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Call Star Protection Agency for your office building, shopping center, or construction site. Let Star Protection take care 24/7. They know what to do to protect your assets, or join the Star team. Need a threat and risk assessment for your business? Call 532-3911. 532-3911. Star Protection Agency, across Hawaii since 1991. Get Star Protection.
Hoipu Bay on Kauai's South Shore. Come Share Our Home, where the Grand Slam was played. Robert Trent Jones Jr. saw the mountains and felt the sea. Sure, great vistas and greens most people only dream of. Take the day off or do business with a bunch of your best customers. Come join the fun and the aloha at Poipu Bay. Call us for your tee time, where great golf is played every day at Poipu Bay. Yeah, yeah, a mongoose stole my ball. What's the rule on that? Let's get back into the clubhouse with Danielle Tucker.
All right, at the Navistar, where Stacey Lewis is, let's see, she's 4-under still through 8, 12-under total, and so is Lexi Thompson, but she's even today through 5. So Stacey Lewis is having quite the day today as the Navistar continues. Tiger Woods with 3 victories this year. Great year, yeah? Not by his standards. All of those victories on familiar turf, where he is this weekend. He's on familiar turf, East Lake and the Tour Championship, the FedEx Cup finale. But not closing has been the main refrain this year from Mr. Woods. And still he says, I get chance.
You know, I'm still right there. I mean, this is a golf course that's playing tough. But, you know, some of the pins are pretty accessible. We've got to get the ball in the fairway. It's this Bermuda rough. It's thin enough where every ball is sitting at the bottom. It just won't sit up. So it's just really hard to judge how far it's going to go, and sometimes it doesn't even fly straight. So it's imperative to get the ball in the fairway, and from there you can attack.
Okay, so here he is. He's got to attack. It's imperative. Welcome to the show, Yahoo Sports main golf writer Jonathan Wall. Good to have you on the show, Jonathan.
Thanks, Danielle.
Now, what's your take on what's going on at East Lake?
Well, I mean, it's kind of going true to form a little bit. I mean, you've got the names that you're kind of expecting at the top. You know, Bubba Watson, Dustin Johnson have both been playing pretty well. You know, when you get to a tournament like this, the cream usually rises to the top. I think Jim Furyk is a little bit of a surprise. He's kind of making Davis Love look like a genius right now for selecting him for the Ryder Cup team. You know, I expect him to play well here because he's won at East Lake in the past, but, you know, I don't know what we're going to see from him on the weekend, of course. It, you know, he had his struggles on Sunday at the Bridgestone and, of course, at Olympic Club for the U.S. Open. So, you know, I think he's probably one of the most interesting storylines of the weekend. I mean, I know Tiger's probably the one that everybody wants to talk about, but I think we really want to see if Jim Furyk can close this out. I mean, he's been close before. You know, but his past history tells you that he should play well on the weekend.
He's a defending FedEx Cup champion. He's done it before.
Right. I know, and that's the thing. You know, it's so surprising. I think the one thing that really blows people away is that Jim's last win came at the 2010 Tour Championship. I mean, he's one of those guys where you almost expect, he's a little bit like a Steve Sturk. You kind of expect him to have a win almost every year. It's just, you know, it's Jim Furyk. He's been so consistent over the years. I think the fact that it's, you know, you have to go back to 2010, which isn't that far away, but, you know, it tells you, he's been struggling to close, and we've seen it again this year.
Yeah, Jim Furyk, Vijay Singh, Tiger Woods. That's something they've had in common for this, I don't know, last how many months. It's like closing used to be no problem for them, and closing seems to be one big boogaboo. And I don't understand Tiger, whether he's unable to control his emotions the way he was before, where he seems to maybe get excited, you know? Oh, my game's back! Yippee! And then it just all falls apart.
I know, and it does. And, you know, I think that's it's a frustrating thing for Tiger because he's won 3 times this year. If it was any other player on tour, I mean, that would be considered a great year. But, you know, Tiger won at 3 courses where he's had success at in the past. And I think a lot of people say, well, he's got the local knowledge. So maybe they're not as big a surprise as you'd expect. I think the one thing for Tiger, and I know a lot of people keep pointing to the fact that he's been having troubles on the weekend, and you know, you can't overlook that, is the fact that he was in contention at the majors this year. all four of the majors. And, you know, I guess if he's going to look at something at the end of this year that's a positive to build on for next year, I think that's what it has to be, is the fact that he did contend. And, you know, he wasn't doing that the last couple of years. So, you know, hopefully he can, like I said, hopefully he can build on that going forward. But, you know, it is troubling the fact that he can put some great rounds together and then all of a sudden it's just like his game just bottoms out, you know, the next round. Just case in point, you know, what we're watching here at the Tour Championship.
Yeah, 66, what was it, 73? I don't know, that yeah. wasn't it that bad. But, yeah, you know, it's, wow.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I can only imagine, you know, when you're doing something really well one day and then you fall off and you can't figure out what it is, that must be extremely frustrating. And still, he comes off, and when you said, I hope he can take away that he's been in, he keeps coming back and saying, you know, I played really well.
I know.
I really played really well today. The score just didn't show it. I think to myself, goodness, that takes a lot of, I'm not sure, confidence, optimism, glass half full.
You know, that's the thing, actually, that I wonder a little bit about Tiger. Sometimes I wonder if he says that just because he wants to kind of close the media up. He doesn't want to answer any more questions. Or if he truly believes that his game is trending in the right direction after a poor round. You know, Tiger's one of those guys where he is so positive even after a bad round. He said it after Friday. He said, I'm still right there.
Yeah.
Well, he's six shots back at the lead. I mean, it's not like he's two or three back. So, you know, and I appreciate the fact that Tiger stays positive. You know, I think that's something that, you know, a lot of amateur golfers could, you know, take a page from Tiger on. But, I mean, the fact remains, he's still way back. He's got to go low. And, you know, I mean, guys in front of him are playing well. So, you know, Tiger has had trouble trying to catch leaders when he's this far back. So I think for him, it's just, you know, trying to find his game right now, fine-tuning and getting ready for the Ryder Cup.
Yeah, getting ready for the Ryder Cup. It brings the best out in him. You know, for the most part, it does. And match play, he's got that. You know, I'm looking at you. I'm looking at you. Now, Charles Barkley. Let's bring up Charles. You wrote an entire article on the Charles thing. Now, Charles should have blasted Greg Norman. Does somebody sit in the back room and decide what funny controversy we're going to be talking about in golf this week?
You know, they do. I mean, it's really, I mean, that's what it seems like. This, in my opinion, is probably one of the most, you know, comical things that I've had to write about and discuss recently. I mean, Greg Norman made some comments, and I think, of course, that seems to be the case with a lot of high-profile athletes. You know, the comments that are the most controversial end up getting in the news. I mean, Greg mentioned after he said, hey, Tiger is intimidated by Rory McIlroy. He kind of followed that up by saying, but, you know, Tiger still has a great game, and I still think he can win. So, but it's like nobody wants to put the follow-up part of the comment because it's not controversial.
Exactly.
And that's the thing. And Greg went and he fired off a post on his Facebook page and, you know, kind of tried to backtrack a little bit. But, you know, this whole thing has gotten blown out of proportion. And you know, Charles Barkley, he's chiming in on this. So it's kind of gotten to the point where you might as well just start playing the circus music right now. It's so silly and over the top that you just kind of have to laugh and shake your head and just, you know, hope that it'll go away quietly. It's Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy, so it most likely won't go away quietly. But, you know, I guess it's wishful thinking right now, but you just, you know, you hope that it does, and that's not an issue next week at the Ryder Cup. That, you know, it's all about the Ryder Cup and not about this, you know, Tiger Rory intimidation.
Yeah, well, I think, I think the Ryder Cup has enough cachet on its own to not require us to be talking about silly things like Charles Barkley being upset that Tiger Woods is taking the high road still and not blasting Greg Norman.
I know.
But it's cute. You know, I mean, I guess Charlie felt that he had to go and defend Tiger somehow, you know, that he was going to be big brother, big bro is going to step
right.
in, right?
They used to be really good friends, and you know that their friendship has really deteriorated. I don't really even think that they talk very much anymore. But you know, Charles Barkley, I mean, that was pretty much his game. It was you know, banging down low with the guys in the post when he was playing in the NBA and trash talking. You know, he was a huge trash talker, and I think for him, he looks at Tiger and says, "Look, you're the best player in the world right now." And Greg Norman calls you out, and you don't say anything. But that's not Tiger's. That's not Tiger's game. You know, he chooses to use his clubs as the way to make a statement when somebody calls him out, and he's always done it that way. And I heard about this. It's not going to change. He's not going to suddenly start calling Greg Norman out and saying that he's wrong. So, you know, for Charles to say that, you know, that's his opinion, but, you know, Tiger has never done it that way.
I'm sorry, I'm having a giggle fest over here because in golf one tends not to do that sort of thing. Trash talking. I just had that thought of, you know, a couple of boxers, they go up and they talk to the press about how they're going to take each other out. And if we come down to golf having to do something like that to get people to talk about the sport, we're in deep kimchi, is what we say over here.
Exactly. Could you imagine them doing a weigh-in and having Rory and Tiger nose to nose with all the cameras flashing and them talking trash? I mean, it really. If you look at it that way, it's pretty funny. But it's one of those things where, you know, we're talking about golf here.
Yes.
We're not talking about boxing or basketball or anything like that. So, you know, like I said, Charles can have his opinions, but this is not what the game is made of.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, but you know what? The game is made of so much money. And what I don't understand is that the trickle-down economy is not working in the game of golf. I mean, see, to me, the idea that we're talking about the golf thing, you know, we're talking about the guys that are making billions of dollars, and we promote all sorts of things about golf. And if it weren't for people like magazine writers, columnists, yourself, you know,
right,
there would be no event, basically. There'd be a bunch of guys getting together to play golf. But we're talking about it, that they're going to make $10 million tomorrow. Some guy is going to walk away with a check. In the meantime, the people who write about it are, you know, not... they're like, hello. They're losing their jobs. And it's kind of frustrating, I think, because it doesn't seem to be working. That's why I have an issue with the trickle-down economy kind of philosophy. That aside, Rory McIlroy, how old is he? He's 23?
Yes, yeah, 23.
And he's selling his home in Northern Ireland?
Yes, he is.
How much is that going for?
Just a little over $3 million, and, you know, which is, you know, of course, chump change to everybody. You know, $3 million for a 6,000 square foot house with a pond, and oh, by the way, it also has a driving range and four greens and a replica of the road hole bunker at St. Andrews, and a, you know, greenskeeper who maintains the golf course. I mean, these players, I mean, even some of the guys that are there that aren't Rory McIlroy, I mean, maybe say a Robert Garrigus, for instance, I mean, they make so much money. In my opinion, they have Tiger Woods to thank for that. I mean, Tiger completely changed the game. He brought in sponsors that probably never would have considered being a part of golf and putting money into the game. And it is, I mean, it's just, it's $10 million. It's absurd. And the fact that they play for it, every year.
Yeah.
It's mind blowing. So it's, you know, it's just the way golf is these days. You just kind of have to, shake your head and enjoy watching these players. But, I mean, geez, it would be nice to be a golfer and, you know, just make the cut and get, you know, $20,000 or $30,000.
Yeah, that's why some people actually criticize the quote-unquote journeyman, the guy who just, he doesn't care if he really wins, make the cut, just keep on doing it. You know, I'm going to put together several million dollars this year. Just,
that's right.
Right? So why should I stress it out? And why, when we think about all of the things that they've got to do, when they win, it's so tedious. You know, they have to meet with the media and they have to do all these interviews. Now, mind you, I understand that that's exhausting And it would be very difficult to do if you won over and over and over again. And Jack Nicklaus said that Tiger Woods, the attention that he has had over the his career so far is 100 times more than Jack Nicklaus ever had to experience. So that is taxing, but he makes a lot of money. And
exactly, and I mean right there you nailed it on the head. That's what it is. They make so much money. I mean, you have to do the appearances, and you have to talk to the media. I mean, when you're making that much money and you're in the public spotlight, it kind of comes with the territory. And Tiger knows that. I think some guys embrace it. And I think other guys just, they would rather just not talk to the media and take their trophy and their check and go home. But it's just, it's just not the way it is these days, especially with social media and everybody has eyeballs on these guys when they win. So they kind of have to be in the spotlight at least for a couple of weeks. But it is, when you're playing for at least $1 million every week to the winner, it comes with the territory, and I think these guys understand that. Most of them do.
Yeah, dude, I think that's why Bubba Watson was floored. We were floored when Bubba Watson, after winning the Masters, just kind of like, I'm gone.
Oh, yeah. I think that was probably one of the most surprising of them all, is Bubba was so amicable, and he talked with everybody and had fun, and I think that he just didn't understand what would happen if he won a major. And when he won the Masters, I think it was like, whoa, this is not what I was expecting. He just kind of enjoyed joking around with the media and having fun. And then all of a sudden it became serious business when he became a major, mm-hmm. when you become a major winner.
Mm-hmm.
But it is. I think Bubba's learned a little bit about it now. He's not going to change. The great thing about Bubba is he's Bubba. He's always going to have fun. He's always going to joke around. But winning a major does change you a little bit. It has to. It comes with a different responsibility. People expect more from you. They expect you to play at a higher level. Some guys, embrace that. And, as we've seen in the past, other guys, Todd Hamilton, for instance, they disappear into the background after they win a major.
Into the ether. We are KPUA Hilo, KGU Honolulu, KONI Lanai City, KTOH Kalaheo, KTOH FM1 Princeville. Who's your pick for the... Okay, put it the story aside. I know you're a journalist, and you don't have favorites.
That's just, right, no favorites.
No favorites. The story is your favorite. But who's your pick at East Lake?
You know what? I really like Bo Van Pelt.
Ah.
He's one of those guys where I was listening yesterday to the post-round broadcast, and I can't remember who it was, but somebody brought up that Bo Van Pelt would have been a great Ryder Cup pick. And I think if most golf fans, if they were to hear that, their eyes would kind of get big, and they would say, Bo Van Pelt over Jim Furyk or Steve Stricker or, the other guys that were captain's picks. But Bo's been playing at an incredibly high level this year. I think he's one of those guys. He's only won once on the PGA Tour, but he's got the game for East Lake. He hits fairways and greens. His putter's been on recently. Yesterday was kind of an interesting round. He kind of ended up his round with three bogeys in his last four holes. He's a guy that I think we should really keep an eye on this weekend, and I wouldn't be surprised if he won here. I don't think he's got too many hurdles and scenarios that have to happen for him to win the FedEx Cup. But I think that, if he could win the Tour Championship, that'd be a great way to cap off a pretty impressive year for him.
Yeah. So, because if he won the Tour Championship, he would not win the FedEx Cup, I don't think. Unless
right, yeah, there's,
a whole
there's
bunch
too
of
many scenarios.
Yeah, right. It's kind of like, but Bill Haas, it was so cute last year when he won the Tour Championship and didn't know he'd won the FedEx Cup.
That's the most surprising thing of all is I think a lot of these guys really don't know where they stand during the playoffs. I mean, just as an example, Charlie Hoffman at the Deutsche Bank, he needed to make a putt on the 18th hole to advance. To the next tournament, to the BMW, And they asked him after his round, they said, did you know what that putt was for? And he said, you know, I knew I was close, but I didn't know, you know, how close. And I think that's one of the things that if I was Tim Fincham, I would consider putting up boards. And I know it would be expensive, putting up boards on every hole. Let these guys, you know, if they want to look, if they don't, fine. But give them a chance to see where they stand. I mean, you add a little bit more pressure to the tournament. Guys realize, hey, if I make this putt, I'm on to the next event. If I miss it, I'm out. I think it'd be great, but it's just, you know, a lot of these guys don't. It's the system, the setup right now is not that difficult. The only problem that I have is just, you know, the resets. And I know a lot of people will say, well, look, you know, if there weren't any resets going into the Tour Championship, Rory McIlroy could essentially sit at home,
yes,
and win the FedEx Cup.
Yes.
But it feels like if a guy has, you know, what Rory's done, one, two out of the three events, it feels like you're just kind of saying, well, you know, congratulations, but, you know, here's your 250-point lead now over Tiger Woods. And Tiger talked a little bit about that this week, that he didn't really like the reset. I've talked to some guys, and some have said they don't like it, and others say, you know, it kind of evens out the playing field. Just to kind of say a little bit on the FedEx Cup, I think, you know, they still need to make some tweaks to it. The fans kind of look at it as a glorified, $10 million payday for some guy. This year, I think, more than any other, we finally have a lot of the big names at the top vying for the FedEx Cup, which we haven't had in the past. So, you know, hopefully we're going in the right direction. Maybe the reset's the answer, but I still think they need to make some, you know, additional changes just to kind of spice it up a little bit.
Yeah, I do understand why they reset, so that it makes this final event have some sort of fun factor. What I thought was cute was you said, put a board up there, put a little bit more pressure on them. These guys need... and that's what you were really doing. You know, you're adding a little bit more spice. And that's what I think the PGA Tour is trying to do, is to spice things up, make it more exciting. So we're still talking about it. So we're still excited. I one part about the FedEx Cup that I find is laborious is listening to too much on television of how exciting it is. You know, you can't make something exciting by saying it's exciting. It either is or it isn't, right?
Yep. And that's I completely agree with you. That's one of the things I always joke about with people, is the fact that we're talking about FedEx Cup points at the Sony Open.
Yeah.
We're just into the very first full field event of the year, and we're already talking about FedEx Cup points. I understand. I mean, FedEx is a huge sponsor, and you know, they want their name out there and for people to know where everybody stands. But I mean, nobody cares about. It's the same thing in professional sports. Whether you look at baseball or football or any of the sports, I mean, they don't start talking about the playoffs until the last couple of weeks of the season. And here, golf is trying to shove the FedEx Cup down everybody's throat from the first event. And I understand that they want to get people excited, but I think the way to do that is just, you know, to make some tweaks to it. Make it so that guys really, you know, they look at these events and they think, I need to play them. Because right now, that's not the case. We had Jason Duffner skip the Barclays. We had Sergio Garcia skip the Deutsche Bank. And these guys are saying, I need a break. I need rest. I'm going to take an event off. And they can... if they're high enough in the FedEx Cup standings, they can take an event off and still make it to the next tournament. So it's one of those things where you just kind of say, well, if that's the case, if you're allowing guys to pass on events, then obviously they don't really rate the first two, let's say, the first two events that highly.
Uh-huh.
Maybe you need to cut down on the fields and make it so that guys have to play. And if they don't play, they're not on to the next event. Because I think right now people just view, like I said, people view it as just a glorified payday, you know, $10 million payday for some guy. And, you know, that needs to change. You need to make guys feel like the first two events are important. I think right now a lot of them just kind of feel like they can kind of coast. And if they're high enough, they'll, you know, most likely make it to the BMW and, you know, end up at the Tour Championship.
And the end up there, yeah. Well, tweaking is important. We could talk on and on and on.
Pretty good.
Here's something. Sports Illustrated, you get to strive. This is a goal. You know, goal setting is very important. You need to, your goal needs to become the top 100 Twitter people.
That's right.
Yes, right? Let's see who's made it. Paul Azinger, Stuart Sink, Hank Haney, Rory McIlroy, Ian Poulter, Alan Shipnuck, and Christina Kim. I think,
yeah.
You know, and she's so sharp, and some people say she shouldn't be spending so much time on Twitter. She should be spending time on her game.
I know. Here's the beef that I have with this list is that they miss a lot of really great writers. Just
yes.
as an example,
yes.
Ron Syrak. How is Ron Syrak not on that list?
I don't know. I don't know why he's not on that list.
That's the thing. I understand that trying to get it from a from a player's perspective, but Ron Syrak has been around the game for years. I mean, he has great insight, and I think if people out there aren't following him already on Twitter, they need to, because he's one of those must follows. And so when you don't see a guy like Ron there, it's like, well, geez, how legitimate is this list?
Jonathan Wall. You can follow Jonathan Wall on Twitter. Jonathan Wall. Thanks for being on the show, Jonathan.
Thank you, Danielle.
We'll be back after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
Poipu Bay on Kauai South Shore has reopened to rave reviews. Come play our newly renovated greens. Bring the family. Invite some friends. When you stand on that tee box and see that view, you'll know why Poipu Bay makes any day special. Come join the Aloha. Visit our pro shop and take home a memory at Poipu Bay, where golf is played. Call 808-742-8711. Your tee time is waiting.
In the security business, trust is earned over time. That's why Star Protection Agency has grown to be the largest locally owned security company in Hawaii. We've earned a reputation as a common sense, highly responsive, cutting-edge security provider. Our clients know that we're watching out for them. We know that our fast response is what makes us a star performer.
And we'd like to thank our clients for their trust over the past 20 years.
Trust your security to the Star. Star Protection Agency.
Our company has been in business more than 30 years, and we depend on Alakai Mechanical for everything. They maintain our air conditioners, sheet metal on our new roof. They just installed our new commercial kitchen. Doesn't matter if you're big business, a condo, or mom and pop store, if you want your job done on time, on budget, and done right, do what we do. Call Alakai Mechanical across Hawaii. The best minds in air conditioning, plumbing, and sheet metal, that's Alakai Mechanical.
To the pin, wind in my face. Where's my wedge? I saw this flop shot on TV. Oh, not even close. Now, back to Danielle Tucker.
All right, we were going to have a guest on this show. I was hoping that Sherry Manor McNamara was going to call in from the Chamber of Commerce. We just kept talking, Jonathan and I, because Sherry never showed. But I want to just mention that the inaugural Business on the Green Golf Tournament presented by ALSCO is happening. So hopefully they'll be on the show next weekend. But this Business on the Green Golf Tournament is Friday, October 12th at Kapolei Golf Course. Yeah, the same place they just had the Champions Tour event. And that course is in spectacular condition. So it's Friday, October 12th. Great prizes, including a $10,000 hole-in-one prize. We all get to dream about that. And it's open to all businesses. You have to register by October 5th. And just go call the Chamber of Commerce of Hawaii, 545-4300. 545-4300. Sounds like a whole lot of fun. Okay? All right. Now, let's go have some fun with Michael Patrick Shields. He's our The Golf Club's travel correspondent extraordinaire. In addition to being like an author of so many books that he has his own Wikipedia page. Welcome to the show, Michael Patrick Shields.
Thank you for having me back. And I heard you talking about players who decide they need a break, and so they skip a couple of the FedEx events. And
yeah.
I think from time to time, believe it or not, amateurs like us need a break too from the game. It happened to me. And I'm sure that it's happened to you.
Oh, yeah. Yes. But, you know, when you're playing for $10 million,
I'd show up. I would show up.
Yes, you'd show up. Exactly. See, we were actually talking about how much money these guys are making versus the people who talk about them or write about them. You know, I mean, I don't expect, you know, writers and commentators to make gazillion dollars, but it just seems like there's a kind of a there's just a lot of big a difference between what you make, Michael Patrick Shields, and what they're making, you know?
Well, you know what? Yes and no, because there was one season when I went 28 weeks on tour from event to event as a writer, and there were weeks that I got paid and people playing in the tour event did not get paid because they didn't make the cut.
Okay.
And
good.
Not only that, but they lost money because they had to pay their expenses, they had to pay their caddy, they had, you know, so there is that.
Yeah,
there is that.
That's very good. Now, listen to Michael Patrick Shields. This is his year. Doral Resort and Spa, Pebble Beach and Spyglass Hill, Crystal Mountain Resort in Arcadia, Bluffs in Michigan with Ben Wright, Grand Del Mar in San Diego, Maui's Fairmont, Wailea, Rome, Florence, Nova Scotia, Biloxi, Mississippi, Cuba, and the Galapagos Islands. It's been a rough 2012, Mr. Shields.
It was a very good year, is what the song says.
it's
not done yet.
Yeah, and you're not done yet. We're only in September. So you're just back from the Galapagos and an eco-tour of the Galapagos.
Yeah, you know, I finished for the third year in a row in my little club championship in Michigan, I finished DFL, if you know what that means. And I was a little bit discouraged, and I said, I got to get away from golf for a while. That's not going to do it. So I went to a place where there was lots of natural beauty, but no golf at all, and that was the Galapagos Islands with Echo Ventura. It was an eco-cruise for a week. And you would laugh because flying from Michigan down to the Galapagos, you have to stop in Miami and connect there on American Airlines and go down into Ecuador. And so I had a six-hour layover at Miami Airport. And I landed at Miami Airport at about 9:30 in the morning. So you know what I did?
Mm.
I got in a cab. $30 cab ride, 6 miles, over to Doral Resort and Spa, and by 10 in the morning, I was in their pool, in the hot tub, under the palm trees, having lunch on the 18th green of the Blue Monster, and then later in the afternoon. Now, that's the way to have a layover, if you're going to have one.
Yes, there was no golf, though. You just enjoyed the vista, right?
Just enjoyed the vista, and I wanted to see if there were any changes yet, because Donald Trump had bought Doral, and the only change I could see so far was that there's a big picture of him in the lobby.
There's no fountain yet? No fountain?
No, there are changes coming, but they're not coming yet.
Oh, come on. That's the joke. Everywhere that Mr. Trump goes, the fountain is sure to follow. You know, he always has those very decorative fountains.
Corey, you know, if you look on the 18th there, they do have a big fountain in the pond on that really tough 18th hole. That's usually the toughest hole on tour on the Blue Monster there, and there is a big fountain in the pond already.
So. Yeah, but
and that's why he liked it.
But you know, maybe that's why he bought it, right? No, but usually.
Oh, I know. You know, you're right. He likes waterfalls.
Yes.
That's his thing.
Waterfalls.
That's it.
Right. Yeah. You know, waterfalls. It's going to be some. Chris Hemeter in Hawaii, he was an 80s developer, and everywhere he went, he put a big, some water works fountain.
Yeah.
In the middle of Kauai, there was like some Apollo statue with horses, and it looked like it could just come out of Roman.
Very natural.
Very natural, yes. Very Hawaii. We all kind of wonder. Scratch head.
If Tom Doak saw that, he would throw up.
So, now tell us about Galapagos. The one thing, Michael Patrick Shields, he's written these great books that you really need to read, and I have a list of them right here, and so I'll mention them in a little bit. You said to me that, in a text, that it's like going to a zoo with no bars.
That's the feeling that I got. You fly into Guayaquil, Ecuador, and then you take a flight. It's about 600 miles into the Pacific along the equator. And once you land in the islands, you hop on this, you can get varying sizes of boats, but the Echo Ventura one that I went on was only 20 passengers.
Wow.
So it was like a little ferry with rooms on it, very tiny rooms.
Okay.
But you're close to, surrounded by, and in the water for the entire 7 days. You know what I mean? It's not like you're on a cruise ship that's a big building in the water. You're right there at water level. And so if you want peace, and there's no wireless internet, there's no television, Your cell phone will not work, and off you go. Every night you travel to these various islands, and you get on a Zodiac boat, and it takes you into shore where you hike or snorkel. And the first and most shocking thing is that you're going to be surrounded by sea lions all over the place, and they swim with you, they play with you. I mean, you don't touch them or anything like that, but they are not afraid of people because it's a national park, and there's very limited amount of people allowed to go in. Only 80 boats are allowed through the entire chain of islands, and you're going to places where there are no facilities, there are no trash cans, there's no trash, there's no telephones, there's no buildings, there's nothing. And to me, it was like if you went to the Arctic, but it was warm and sunny instead of cold, because you're seeing all these indigenous birds. The blue-footed booby is one of the most famous birds there, and striking to look at. And the sharks and the crabs and the sea lions and the fish, turtles. And so if you want to go somewhere and just feel like you're in another world, and every island's a little bit different because they're volcanic, and I recognize that I'm talking to people who live in paradise anyway, in Hawaii, but if you want to get away from it all and not see anybody and feel when you're in like a wetsuit snorkeling amongst these caves and rocks, like you're just part of nature, and it was an absolute gas.
Wow, that sounds wonderful. And the sea lions, they don't feel intimidated, like they have to like become all bilious and come at you, you know, like.
No, they play with you, and you know, there are occasions, and you'll know when you see it, and the guide will tell you, because they send you with naturalists, because for one, they want to make sure you don't do anything you shouldn't do, and for two, they teach you along the way. But every once in a while, you'll get a sea lion who's sort of the guard. He's swimming back and forth and making sure that nobody comes in, and you stay away from him because he's not going to hurt you, but he will charge you and try to intimidate you.
That's the one. That's what I meant. Charge you. Yeah. He's
on patrol.
Yes. Yes. And he's going to take care of his flock. Oh, I love that. I feel like I'm there when you're talking about it. And the beauty of it is, you know, that you feel like you're part of nature. You're actually submerged with those animals, and you're not. You're not doing something to them. You're being a part of them.
It's a strange feeling of equanimity that especially when you're in the water and they're not bothered by you at all. And you look at the setting and you say, "Wow, what am I doing here? And how did I get here?" I won't lie to you. There were times when we climbed up on top of a volcano and I looked down. And I said, "No, that looks like a pretty good site for a par five right there."
Aha!
Yeah, it comes naturally, you know.
All right. Now, what's the food like? I can hear everybody saying, "Yeah, but what did you eat?"
They had three meals a day on board the boat and snacks in between. And you know, it's a very active trip though. So when you get to that cocktail time on the sun deck for sunset at around 6 or 7 o'clock, it feels pretty good because you've you had through two or three activities all day long. And it was fine. It was a lot of seafood, of course. And
they didn't catch any of the fish from that area. They brought it in, right?
Oh, no. No, there's no fishing. Nothing like that. No, they don't. It's a completely protected environment. So you do see penguins, too.
Penguins?
And there's no midnight grand buffet on the boat. You know, this is not a a big cruise like that. This is an active, put your wetsuit on, jump in. The only cool thing they did is when you came back from the snorkeling or the hiking and you got off the Zodiac and walked on the boat, there was a man there dressed in white who had a series of fruit juices and hors d'oeuvres waiting for you. So that was kind
of
neat.
Oh, that's nice. Because, of course, you're famished.
Yeah. You know, there's no hot dog stand out there or nothing like that. You're just... you're living it up, and the cruise costs about $5,000 per person for 7 days, and that might seem like a dear price, but when you add up the activities that you get to do and the way they look after you and take care of you and the fact that you're going into a once-in-a-lifetime bucket list kind of environment.
Yeah.
You know, the iguanas. You know, have you ever seen an iguana swim?
No, I have not seen it. I haven't seen a penguin up. I haven't seen a sea lion swim with me. Are you kidding? An iguana swim. What does it look like when they swim?
It's freaky, man. I wouldn't want to run across them in a snorkel, but I see they have animals like that swim there. So you're going to see things and you're going to have a lot of fun and you're going to be able to relax and you can opt out of any of the activities. I did see a couple of white-tipped reef sharks when I was snorkeling. Maybe that's not shocking to people in Hawaii who can snorkel anytime they want, but to me it was pretty neat.
Yeah, no, we have to go to Hanauma and hope that, you know, everything's going to be cool there, and there's a lot of people around, and it's very crowded, and so it's, but you know what I mean, it's because it's a natural preserve, and you can't fish there, so we understand what you're talking about, but to be in islands, what if the entire state of Hawaii was a natural preserve, and we were just allowed to kind of, like, go in? That's something we've not experienced, and that's something
a good way to describe it.
That's what I would like to experience. That would be nice to be a part of.
They regulate it too. I mean, only the cruise schedules for the various boats are regulated so that when you're there, there's not a crowd. You're not going to see like
right across there. Your neighbors, and you go, "Hey, how's it going?"
No, yeah, they really got it down. It's an impressive place, and they don't beat you over the head, but they remind you that wherever you live is paradise too, and you got to take care of it because it affects the rest of the world. And this place is a living sort of laboratory of evolution as they watch and see what happens in that kind of environment. So that was pretty cool.
That is Michael Patrick Shields, American radio personality and author, former host of Michael Patrick Shields in the Morning. He is now, you are Michigan State Radio, right?
They call it Michigan's Big Show. It's on radio stations across the state of Michigan and on television as well. We're at the state capitol there in Lansing. And in fact, I'm sitting on campus of Michigan State University right now, and the marching band is about to get ready for their kickoff with Eastern Michigan.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, they got the Notre Dame game, Michigan game tonight, and I'm sure the Rainbow Warriors are somewhere.
Oh, yes.
Ready to have a tiff, too.
Yes, they are. And my uncle was a Michigan fanatic, and if you said anything during a football game while he was watching, you were banished to the desert.
Hey, by the way, speaking of that, if you want a natural environment for golf without having to go to the UK, Nova Scotia has a place now called Cabot Links that opened up this summer. I got there a little bit earlier. It's developed by the same guy, Mike Kaiser, who did Pacific Dunes and Bandon Dunes.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, you fly into Nova Scotia there to Halifax, and it's about a 3-hour drive, and you get up there. It's a setting very much like Scotland in a town called Inverness, believe it or not. And they built a very natural links course right on the sea there. And so Canada might be a stop for you next summer when it warms up.
Nova Scotia. And what's the name? Cabot?
It's called Cabot Links. And it's Donald Sutherland did their video. If you go on the website and have a look at it, because he was such a big fan of the place and had Canadian roots, and you'll hear his voice and you'll see that it looks like a very natural links course. And it's a pretty cool setting.
Cabot Links, just to hear Donald Sutherland speak is worth going to the website.
Dramatic.
I love his voice. I love how he speaks. It's wonderful. Michael Patrick Shields, Secrets of the Great Golf Course Architects, the Treasury of the World's Greatest Golf Courses by History's Master Designers, one of his books. Another Golf's Short Game for Dummies. That's one of my special. I have that right next to my bed. Michael Patrick Shields, also Works of Art, Golf Course Designs by Arthur Hills, Speak Right, A Literary Guide to the Game of Golf. And by the way, Michael, you have to go to Wikipedia and make sure they have everything right, okay?
Yeah, if I knew how to do that, I would.
Okay. Thanks for being on the show. Thanks for taking
aloha.
Us to the Galapagos.
Yeah,
fantastic.
Where are we going next?
Where are we going next?
Going to Monte Carlo for the anniversary of the big casino there and the opening of the new James Bond movie.
Oh, and you look so good in a tux. Awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. All right.
You look good in a grass skirt, baby.
Oh, thank you for making the golf club possible. Poipu Bay Golf Course, combining the beauty of nature, the design of Robert Trent Jones, Jr., bordered by emerald green mountains, 30 acres of tropical plants, ancient places of worship, Poipu Bay Golf Course, Kauai's South Shore gem. Alakai Mechanical, number one for your air conditioning and plumbing needs. You gotta have your air conditioning running at top efficiency. That's why you need service from Alakai Mechanical. Star Protection for property threat and risk assessment. Protection for your home, for your business, for your concert, whatever special event you've got going on. Get the Star Team on your property. By the way, they're in California and, of course, all over Hawaii. Avance Salon, color, cut, silkening technology, extensions, manicure, pedicure, whatever you need, Avance Salon. And thank you for your mana. May you hit the sweet spot every time. I'm Danielle Tucker, and this is The Golf Club.
You've been listening to the award-winning Golf Club Radio Show with Danielle Tucker on the Golf Club Network statewide. Tune in next week, and we'll tee it up together only on The Golf Club.
Copyright 2012.